So if you could please come forward and provide the subcommittee or the advisory committee your comments regarding action item number three. We are running actually half an hour ahead of schedule, so that'll give us plenty of time to discuss these next issues before the advisory committee. We have Annabelle Garay.
Good morning, committee members. My name is Annabelle Garay. I'm a field representative with the California Federation of Interpreters. Thank you for having me this morning. I want to discuss two items that impact interpreter funding. The first is the Revenue and Expenditure Subcommittee's recommendation to essentially take $1.7 million from the Court Interpreter Fund, Program 4545, to pay for the Domestic Violence Family Law Interpreter Program. Instead of continuing to use the Improvement and Modification Fund. If the recommendation is to redirect $1.7 million from Program 4545 into the Domestic Violence Family Law Interpreter Program, which was typically funded by the State Trial Court Improvement and Modernization Fund, we ask, how will the extra $1.7 million now left in the IMF be spent? In essence, this recommendation is redirecting federal family grant money for interpreters to other unspecified purposes. Furthermore, as stated in the recommendation, the U.S. Department of Justice has indicated that several current policies, practices, and procedures of the L.A. County Superior Court, the AOC, the Judicial Council, and courts statewide appear to be inconsistent with civil rights law. This action reduces the overall pot of funding available for fixing this problem and complying with civil rights law. In fact, the first recommendation in the DOJ letter sent earlier this summer was to refrain from taking any actions to reallocate the unspent appropriations from the 4545 fund. This redirecting of interpreter funding needs to stop. The DOJ has said it needs to stop. Court interpreters statewide have said it for years as well. It needs to stop. This recommendation is only reducing the Judicial Council's ability to fix the problems outlined in the DOJ letter, and it goes against the number one recommendation made by the DOJ. The other item I also want to address is a request to take $65,000 from the court interpreter funding, again, Program 4545, to pay for non-judicial council members on the joint work group that's developing a language access plan. We are currently in discussions with AOC staff to find better ways to spend the money in Program 4545 on court interpreter services in a way that is not piecemeal and that is efficient. However, this recommendation proposes that $65,000 of that fund be made available to the joint working group to pay for the services of an attorney and to seek the service of a certified court interpreter already under contract with the AOC to assist with this new joint working group. At a time when the interpreter budget has been swept for years and funding has been redirected, interpreter wages have been stagnant. Half of the interpreters in the state are working without a contract. That includes interpreters in the Los Angeles area and in the Bay Area. They've gone 6 years without a cost of living adjustment or a pay increase of any kind. They are the only employees in their courts without wage steps that reward experience. It is unreasonable to expect that interpreters would continue to accept this decline in real wages without any relief. Additionally, Program 4545 funds are required to be spent on interpreters and interpreter services, and not made available to a joint working group of the Judicial Council for administrative or AOC tasks. Thank you for your time, and thank you for your attention to these important matters.
Thank you.
Now we're going to have the chairs of the Expenditure and Revenue Review Committee, Judge Trenacosta and Sherry Carter, give us an overview of the process that the subcommittee undertook to review the expenditures and to start walking us through the recommendations.
All right, good morning. The Revenue and Expenditures Subcommittee met in person on August 1st here in San Francisco. We were tasked with conducting a line item review of the projects and programs that are funded by the Improvement and Modernization Fund and, secondly, the Trial Court Trust Fund. Before the meeting, we were provided with materials that you see duplicated in your materials at pages 14 through and including 92. These are descriptions of the ask, of whether or not there was a request for additional or less funding for the given program, and it described in detail the individual project and or program. At the live meeting, staff was present and made presentations, and most importantly, was available to answer questions. We heard from a variety of staff, including those from security, the Center for Families, Children, and Courts, judicial education, legal services, the internal audit services, fiscal services, HR, and, as will become clearer, technology. After reviewing all of the materials and asking all of the questions that every committee member wanted to ask, there was a vote regarding the proposed allocations. For your ease of reference, there are spreadsheets on page 93 through and including 95. On pages 93 and 94, we have the spreadsheet with respect to the IMF fund. On page 95, you'll see the second task, which is a spreadsheet on the trial court trust fund. In the materials that were prepared for today's meeting, beginning at page 11, there are a series of recommendations that are recapitulated in these materials, and essentially, as to the IMF, there are three recommendations, and they are found on pages, well, it should be 11 and 12. And both Sherry, myself, and members of the committee, as well as Zlatko and his staff, are available to answer any questions concerning the discussions that were had and the ultimate votes. But I will ask if you would like me to begin with the specific recommendations, or if Zlatko or Sherry, if you wish to make any additional comments before we go to the specific recommendations.
I think I would just make some general comments about the information, because some of you on the advisory committee are new, and so we want to just make sure you're aware, familiar with all the different types of expenditures that are made from the IMF and the TCTF. So on page 93, as in terms of the summary, you can see we have funding for Office of Security, Trial Court Security Grants. Malcolm and his staff go out and make sure that they do security audits. They're installing appropriate equipment to try and maintain secure facilities out there for everyone. We have a number of issues in CFCC. Of particular note would be the self-help centers at $5 million. Again, a number of programs that are funded for items such as domestic violence, as we discussed.
Zlatko?
Yes.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but if you turn to page 17, it outlines in more detail what Zlatko's going through. For example, the security request and what it was based on starts on page 17, which then aligns with, on page 93, their request line item number 2.
And those are the narrative.
Exactly.
That were provided.
So as Zlatko's going through them, the details of the request start on 17, and you can track them down through the spreadsheet on page 93. So I apologize, Zlatko.
No, that's fine, Sherry. Any help is appreciated. I think as a change in process from the prior years in which this subcommittee had done its work, we did bring in chairs of advisory committees. For example, we had Judge Austin, we had Judge Herman, we had folks discussing it, not just the AOC staff, but also I thought it was helpful to provide the subcommittee sort of greater context from the policy perspective there. So I think that was helpful. As you can see, again, on 93, we have a number of programs that are funded for and recommended for funding in CGR education area. It's a good discussion about those programs. And mind you, the amounts that are shown here are generally from program levels of a couple of years ago are reduced. Just to give you a bit of history, as part of our budget reductions that were the branch faced a few years ago, $20 million was moved from the Improvement and Modernization Fund and moved to offset trial court cuts. And so the levels that you see here are reduced from their historical highs, and in some cases there are further reductions, in some cases there are some adjustments upwards. I think there'll be some interesting conversation when we talk about technology, I think in a bit. But again, these are reduced levels, and staff as proposed, they're generally the same level as there were in the previous year. But we did have, again, good conversations about the merits and the value of these programs. And I think there was some discussion about some of these programs being so important that we'd love to invest more resources, but we don't have the revenues. Yes, Kimberly Flenner.
Sir. I just have a question just because I was on it the prior year. Sorry. When the committee met this time, was there a goal set prior to the discussion about each of the individual line items? Did you go into it under the mindset of this is the amount of money that we need to reduce? Did you have anything set, any discussion on that? Was there?
Generally, there were amounts that were proposed, and each the merits of each were discussed. So we went through each item and whether or not it should remain at the level. There were items where there were reductions that were proposed or same amounts of funding proposed. The issue that I think we're going to have to tackle, and we are setting up another meeting, is what do we do in the future? This fund, and Stephen will talk about this in the later, is that this fund, the IMF, has an imbalance. It spends more on an annual basis than the revenues that come in, and the only thing that's allowing us to keep the levels of expenditures that are currently before you is because we have money in the bank. We have fund balance. So we're going to have some important discussions and difficult decisions to make for the 14-15 fiscal year, so next fiscal year, as to how to make sure that this fund is brought into balance. So I think that the sort of hard reduction discussions, the what do we do with this overall fund management is going to be a discussion that we're going to have in the next couple of months, and we'll be coming back to this advisory committee to make those kind of recommendations to the council for the future of the fund. Judge Slough and then Tanya.
So, you kind of got to the question that I had, which is the viability of these funds in the bigger budget picture. Mm-hmm. Where is the IMF fund? Where is the trial court trust fund before we get into the line items, so that we know kind of what we're dealing with? And you mentioned Mr. Chang might be speaking to that, and it might be helpful to have him speak before we look at it on the viability of these funds.
We were going to discuss at least the trial court trust fund program expenditure authority after this item, but it may be worthwhile then, Stephen, if you're available, to discuss what is on page 96.
And the IMF
and
fund also?
Yeah, 96 is the IMF.
Thank you.
And 97 is the trial court trust fund. So this gives you some context of the sort of the challenges that we'll be facing going forward.
Just one additional question. Are we expecting to lose these fund balances at the end of the year? Does the 2% apply to this or not?
No, this is not part of those are the trial court's local fund balances. These are state-level fund balances. They're not subject to that 1% cap.
But are they – so they're just not part of the
– No.
The elimination state, of fund balances
right,
for the courts.
Right. But in terms of our overall expenditures and management of the funds, we're expecting to actually exhaust them, notwithstanding any statutory limitations. Tanya, you had a question?
I think I've answered my own question because I got in there and looked.
Okay. So what we're going to now do is, before we get into the detail then, is to have Stephen walk through page 96, which is a fund condition. And the fund condition statement says, what are your bank account? What do you have in the bank? How much money do you get flowing in? What are your expenditures? And what's left? And so we have a bit of a sort of additional information that we provide in which we say, okay, fine. We know what our annual budget is. We know what our revenues are. But are they in balance? Are you spending more than you're getting in? Because that's important to understand. You at some point will go broke once you spend all the money in the bank. So that's the sort of the dilemma that we have as a branch in managing that fund. The trial court trust fund is not in the same situation, but it is tight in terms of its revenues and expenditures. So with that, Stephen, appreciate you jumping ahead and giving context to this conversation.
Sure. Let's start with the Improvement and Modernization Fund on page 96. I would focus your attention on the third to last column, fiscal year 2013 recommended / referred. So beginning balance for the beginning of this fiscal year for the IMF is about $45 million, and we're expecting to receive an additional net $53 million from various transfers and other revenues that come into the Improvement Modernization Fund. So the net resources that we're projecting to have to spend that could be spent this year is about $99 million. And that's on line 21. If you look at line 23, the total that was proposed by AOC staff, and that's which is actually higher than what's currently being proposed by this subcommittee, and also including the deferred items, is $74 million. So we would have sufficient resources to fund all of those allocations. You'll notice, though, however, that on line 31, you'll see a negative $21 million. That's because the revenues, which is $53 million, is about $21 million less than what the projected allocations are, or the high-level or recommended allocations are. So there's a structural deficit of $21 million. So that was the issue that the subcommittee was faced with. We have enough resources to deal with to cover all the allocations this year. But going forward, if we kept maintained the level of allocations at some point, not next year, but probably in 15-16, we would run out of money. We could not support a level of allocations at $71 million or $74 million.
Stephen, if I may, just one more important fact. So we discussed the $20 million movement out of the IMF into the Trucker Trust Fund. An important movement of funds that was made last year and is assumed to continue in the 13-14 fiscal year was the funding of the Phoenix program. It was previously, as you many of you know, was a trial court trust fund cost, and it was paid as reimbursements from the trial courts as part of the SEC and the JC directives. It was looked at, is there another way to fund this rather than a charge to the trial courts? And so last year's subcommittee and ultimately the council did adopt a movement of about $7 million out of the TCTF and into the IMF. So that's a newer, sort of a new development to the picture from just the $20 million. So that's added to the sort of the strain on the fund to live within the revenues that it has on an annual basis.
Any questions about the IMF?
Actually, Judge Earl, this is Jake.
Yes.
So, Zlatko, could you, I guess I don't understand that last comment. Are you saying that $7 million for Phoenix is in this estimated revenue, estimated expenditure for the IMF for 13-14?
Yes.
And it's in the list of programs that go into the total expenditure?
Yes.
Okay.
David Yamasaki.
I had a question regarding the IMF, which currently is the source of the Family Law Interpreter Program. I think we may have heard earlier that the source of that money currently is a federal grant. Is that the case?
I don't believe that's the case, no.
Thank you.
Okay, why don't we turn to page 97, and we'll talk about the Trial Court Trust Fund, TCTF. Specifically, what we're dealing with today, other than the transfer of the money of the essentially the $1.73 million from the IMF to the trial court trust fund, but that would be program 4545, the court interpreter appropriation. But other than that, we're talking about the appropriations related to program 3015 and 3005. That's rows 31 and 32. If you look at column C, row 31, the total amount of appropriation expenditure authority provided in the Budget Act this year was $6.3 million.
That's the amount, that's the maximum amount that the budget allows us as a branch to spend on these particular programs in this line item. So when he says expenditure authority, Budget Act authority, appropriations, it's your maximum limit out of that particular line item on those types of costs.
Right.
It's established by the legislature. But we don't have to necessarily spend all of that if it's not necessary given the program's actual costs, and that's what Stephen's going to get to next.
Right, and so for the program 30.05 item, it's mostly monies that support AOC staff activities and their support of the trial courts. Then in row 32, you see a $29 million figure. That's the maximum we could spend, and these are related to costs that go actually be paid to vendors on behalf of the trial courts, mostly related to case management systems, equal access program, as well as the Sergeant Shriver Civil Representation Program. What we're actually planning to spend is can be found on column E, and what's being proposed before you today, $3.8 million related to program 30.05 and only $19.5 million related to program 3015. Overall, in terms of the trial court trust fund, if you look at column E, we're projecting to have an estimated ending fund balance of about $56 million by the end of the year.
Stephen, can you back up a little bit? Okay,
sure.
The $19 million, $19.5 that we're projecting to spend in 30.15, tell me again what that is. Give me CMS systems, you said Shriver grant.
Right, it'll be the project. V2, V3, Sergeant Shriver, as well as equal access.
The detail is what's on page 95. Mm-hmm. So when we were before we were going to go through the IMF and the TCTF expenditures, page 95 outlines all of the TCTF expenditures and the programs that are related to that. Sherry Carter, yes?
And also 24, Chris. If you look at page 24, then it goes into detail about the Trial Court Trust Fund requests also.
Yeah, Rick. When you say case management systems, does that include the sustained courts as well that are hosted by the AOC?
Yes. That's, I think, referred to as the Intermediate Case Management System program.
So this all contributes to our fund our fund condition, the health of the TCTF. So you're going to sort of complete the issue of authority versus what we anticipate spending and where our fund will be anticipated at the end of the fiscal year.
Actually, I can cover that.
Just in terms of authority.
All right. So if you want to page 98, I need to get out of page. So just to give you a little bit of context, the reason why it's important to raise this issue and to inform you about the projected remaining appropriation authority in program, Trial Court Trust Fund Program 4510, is that in, I think, action item 6, there's going to be a request made of you to fund the Fresno case management system. And that will be allocated out of the Trial Court Trust Fund Program 4510. So you need to be aware whether or not we have a sufficient appropriation authority to do so. If you look at page 99, let's give you the bottom line. The very last row, 57, we're projecting to have, right now, given all the allocations that the council has made and our projected allocation based on council allocation policy, we're projected to have $7.3 million in remaining allocation from program 4510. So you could spend, if you had the money in the trial court trust fund, you could spend up to an additional $7.3 million out of the trial court trust fund using the program 4510 appropriation authority. Let me quickly walk you through. There's one caveat that you need to understand. There's one assumption, a key assumption that's made here. Lines 1 through 16 are all allocations that the council approved at its July 25th meeting. If you look at line 15, just to remind you, there was they approved an allocation of unfunded for unfunded 12-13 full-year benefit cost increases of $29 million. And then in line 16, criminal justice realignment, the council only made a $4.6 million a preliminary allocation, but we're setting aside the full $9.2 million, which will be allocated by, hopefully, by December or January. The next items, 20 through 25, are items that the council approved, and these are maximum levels. So these might come in a little less, and if a court expenditure is exceeded, we cannot go above what's been allocated in these line items. The one thing I want to bring to your attention is line 29, civil assessments. Last year was the highest level of civil assessments, remittances, and distributions to the court since the money became remitted to the state trial court trust fund. Last year, total remittances was about $149 million, and courts received about $101 million. So the key assumption here is that we're assuming that in 13-14, the civil assessments are going to remain at the same level. It's possible that they could go up or down. In 12-13, there was a 4% increase. It went from $143 million to $149 million. So if there's a similar increase this year, a 4% increase would be about $6 million. So it's possible that if you wanted to fully distribute all of the civil assessments, and it was at $107 million level, then the remaining appropriation authority would only be $1 million. So that's what you need to consider as you look at the Fresno request, is whether or not you think these estimates are appropriate.
So sort of bottom lining it, it's a matter of what did the budget say we can spend? Mm-hmm. We have specific tallies against those numbers that we all know, and we've discussed those, and they've been approved by the council. There's still some room left that we haven't identified for expenditure yet. We have two issues. Number one is, well, what if we want to spend them on? Number two is, do we actually have the revenues to support those expenditures? And historically, while our expenditure level has been at one level, we have a little extra expenditure authority, but we don't necessarily generate the revenues to fully expend that authority. We need the flexibility in the event that there are revenue bumps, like in this case of the civil assessments, because we want to be able as a branch to have some ability to manage our trial court trust fund appropriation. We don't want to have it fully utilized because there may be some circumstance that this advisory committee thinks needs to be appropriated or allocated for a certain need. And it's good to have some room to be able to do that. Otherwise, you have to go to the legislature and ask for the Department of Finance and legislature and ask for them to spend that revenue that we have. So it's an important management tool for the branch to be able to utilize that wisely, that remaining credit limit, so to speak, that is not fully spoken for. But as Stephen has discussed, we have civil assessment revenues that might come in higher. We have the issue of the Fresno request. Those are things that are not in these numbers yet and could exhaust that bottom line of $7.3 million at the end of the fiscal year. So keep that in mind. Yes, Sherry.
Is there a way to, I don't know if I'm going to ask the right question, but civil assessment is really very different than state funding because it's generated locally based on local decisions that the court is making. And it really is somewhat related to how I know the legislature would like to make sure that the courts are enforcing the laws, and that's what civil assessments do because they're in lieu of a warrant. Is there a way to either seek additional authority or to somehow help educate the Department of Finance and others that this isn't really state funding? I mean, I know it goes to them and comes mm-hmm. back so it looks that way, but it really is not. It's not like an allocation from the state. It's really based on a lot of local decisions and hard work at the trial court level. If that is what is causing some of the tightness, is there a way where we could have that look differently because it is different?
Well, in terms of pure authority, we can. There is a provision in the Budget Act that allows for us to ask to spend more of that if it comes in at a higher level. So we do have that authority to ask them. It's a matter of, so in the nature and the character of those revenues, it's not some sort of specific program, but rather funding-based operations using the civil assessments, right?
Let me be a little bit more direct. Because the money comes back to the courts who collect it, mm-hmm. Is there a way to work with the Department of Finance and others to help them understand that that is squeezing our authority, where in fact it really goes back to those courts dollar for dollar, rather than allocating the state funds? Is there a way to try to work together with them to help them not include that as part of our allocation authority, since it goes right back to the courts that are implementing those procedures?
There's always an opportunity to discuss those issues with them. Absolutely.
Just real quick, I wanted to echo Sherry's comments, because I've always looked at civil assessment as more of a reimbursement for efforts that we have to take to collect uncollectible or difficult to collect fines. So rather than additional revenue, it's really more of a reimbursement.
Right. That's excellently stated.
Are there any more questions in terms of the, or any additional information?
Can I just say two things? I just want to continue your attention to lines 54 and 55. I just want to bring to your attention that last year we did not have enough expenditure authority to distribute about $4.7 million of benefits backfill funding, and so we're planning to do that this year. Also, we did not have enough expenditure authority to distribute all of the civil assessments that we're obligated to return to the courts, and that's going to be about $1.75 million. So we're going to do that out of this year's appropriation authority.
So, Stephen, based upon this, we have now remaining, if everything went according to 98 and 99, we have $7.3 million remaining authority.
That's correct.
So then, if I understand it, we have one fund that's operating at a deficit of $21 million and another that may have $7 million, assuming our assumptions are solid.
Let's make sure we don't. That's mixing two concepts. One is our expenditure authority and whether we've written all the checks against that maximum credit limit. We still have authority in the IMF in the same way. It's that ability to spend. It's whether or not there's revenues there. So
understood.
One is the sort of the health of your bank account. One is what you can actually spend on an annual basis. And so the IMF and the TCTF, both from a budget authority credit limit perspective, have room. The fund that is the one that's most out of balance is the IMF. So that's a sort of looking at it as, you know, I can write checks if I have the money. If I don't have the money, then it doesn't really matter that I can charge $10,000 on my credit card.
Got it. Thank you. Stephen, that $7 million, though, is with the assumption that the civil assessments not only will meet the high level that we collected this most recent year, but will increase by 5 or 6%, whatever you said?
No.
Is that correct?
I'm assuming it doesn't increase.
You're assuming it doesn't.
Get the flat.
It assumes that we will have the same year that we just had.
Yes.
And I have a concern about that. I can't imagine that that's going to happen. I think that's a little bit of a blip. It'd be great, but what's our plan B if it doesn't? That's a pretty big assumption.
So are there any questions? Hopefully we're trying to make it accessible in terms of the concepts and this conversation about the IMF and the TCTF expenditures, how they fit. We assume certain levels in the materials that you have before you. If you spend less than in the IMF, then obviously there's two things. One is that the money doesn't go out, but then there's a programmatic implication if we don't do any of these, and that's what the materials are sort of giving to you, the rationale for the expenditure. And there was a few issues. There were many issues that didn't have any concerns from the subcommittee, and they were voted generally unanimously. There were a couple that were outright not recommended at all. There were some that were asked to be deferred for discussion at today's meeting. Those were the high-level recommendations, and then there was a specific discussion about the complex litigation and how it should be dealt with, given that it's a pilot now of multiple years, and 13 years of a pilot program may warrant sort of a revisiting of that. And we had a good discussion. Yes, Sherry.
I just want to address Kim's question. Because your committee last year did such a good job of doing a line-by-line review and doing a lot of the reductions, I, at least when I reviewed the material, I only looked at the ones where there was an increase, because it reflected what the decrease was last year from the one before. So we didn't start with the target of what we needed to save. We looked at each account separately, and if there was a change from last year where there were already reductions, why did they feel they needed it, and what was it going to go to, and did it make sense? So it was slightly different than last year.
If I could just ask Sherry a follow-up question. Was there any discussion about a strategy for recognizing that the fund is going to deplete, the fund balance will deplete, and kind of the glide path to bring these programs down?
Yes. Okay. We agreed to have a meeting, and Judge Trenacost, is it okay if I?
Nope.
Okay. We agreed to have a meeting in September where we would do long-term strategic planning, and we would look at every single thing that's being funded by both accounts and start asking questions. For example, if the request by Fresno is funded, that's going to drop off in a couple of years, so that's $2 or $3 million that will now be available. What will happen to V2 and V3? We don't know, but we need to talk about it. Should we always fund Phoenix Financial? I am one who you all know has always said, yes, we should, because it's a mandated program in all 58 counties. I had to throw that in. So we need to look at every single thing and start talking long term. What will it look like next year, and how will it change in the year after that and the year after that? And not just deal with this year after year, but go out maybe 3 to 5 years.
And then are the programs themselves and the staff that are managing these programs, are they being, you know, charged? Do you anticipate they will be charged with themselves kind of putting forward proposals for either ramping down or?
Yes, I think looking at those programs that are funded and what they actually cost and how they may be managed going in the years out. So, yes, I think, but that's going to be part of our September
right.
meeting.
Okay, yeah. Thanks. Let me ask a question, Judge Trenacosta. Did you, how did you want to handle the discussion today? Are you just looking for a vote on the recommendations, or did you intend to go through, for instance, the various programs within the two funds and solicit questions, or how did you want to do that?
Well, certainly, if anyone has any questions, we should address those questions. But if I may, just take this, hopefully move the ball a little bit down the field. As you can see on page 94, and that's column 3, go down to line 82. That's page 94, column 3, line 82. You'll see a figure there of 77 million, et cetera, and that was the proposed allocation. If you move over to column 4, still on line 82, you will see the result of our committee's work, in which we voted to approve, or at least recommend approval, of the $58 million and change. And really, it seems to me, unless anyone has any questions about what was approved under that $58 million, that might be a good starting point. If there are none, it seems to me the question that is before us today is, what about the stuff that's in between? That is, stuff that the committee voted to either deny funding or where the committee voted that there was insufficient information to make the kind of intelligent decision we needed to make, and we have deferred a couple of items. The elephant in the room, the large item that was deferred, was a large item regarding technology. And we'll speak to that in just a few minutes, but suffice to say that there were two issues going on. First, we felt that there was a $15 million request, but that there was insufficient information from which the committee that day could make the decision. And as you are aware, yesterday we all received, I trust everybody received it together, some information that answered some of the questions that the committee members had. I think that is part of what was of concern. If I may speak out of turn, I think that summarizing some of the committee's concerns, we realize that Judge Herman and his committee are going to make a report on technology. It is a report that we are all awaiting. It is a report that will be sometime this fall. But as we went through, it appeared to the members of the committee that we have just finished the WAFM model, We have just had lots of discussions about equity between the 58 counties. And there was a sense that our technology needed that same kind of care and analysis, that the branch clearly needs to have a cohesive policy and a comprehensive plan, and that once that is in place, future technology decisions perhaps would be, well, ineluctable conclusions. We did not have the benefit of being in that position, given that Judge Herman's report has not been published. There hasn't been the kind of debate and vetting and discussion about the future of technology, but as committee members, we realized that our courts, from a technology standpoint, are at risk, that certain things simply need to be refreshed or replaced. We cannot have a case management system or any technology system fail. So the discussion was one that was, I think, realistic. There were certain items that, frankly, we voted to approve because our failure to do so would impact severely or even cripple some courts, and that's certainly not what anyone wanted or intended. But the committee does feel that this committee and certainly the branch will need to grapple with a very complicated problem for which there appears to be very little money to solve. So with that as prologue, I suppose we can move on.
Did you want to jump in?
Sure. So we've been having direct and indirect conversations with Judge Trenacosta and with Sherry, and by we, I mean Flacco, Mark, and myself, about where to take this in the future. And obviously, as Judge Trenacosta and Sherry have indicated, this is a very complex area to try and deal with, yet there clearly is a need to try and have more transparency. So the thought process was using, if you will, the WAFM approach, that we would embark upon a similar effort to try and dissect the budget and look at equity issues across the board. And so this would be an ongoing effort where we want to try and produce some results and work with the trial courts moving forward in a positive manner.
Judge Walter.
Well, yeah, I found that intriguing and hopeful. It's mentioned on page 11, the recommendation 2 under TCTF mentions almost in passing that the subcommittee, that would be Judge Trenacosta's subcommittee, might possibly recommend a new methodology for allocating monies for trial court technology programs and projects in general and case management systems in particular. And I thought, when I read that, hooray, please do it. Could you do it next week, what, next month? Because so much of this that I read is in the context of, well, that expenditure may be needed. Orange County, maybe they need that. Or Fresno, they probably do need that. But that's one question. Next question, well, what's fair in terms of who pays for it or how that money gets allocated? And that seemed was driving so much of my thinking. So I think it would be great if your subcommittee did that, but then it occurs to me, well, Judge Herman has a group doing it. I know it's on the parking lot list of funding methodology. I can't imagine we would get to it before you would, but is there a sense that one group will get their arms around this, and who will that be, and when we might have that information?
Maybe Judge Slough could speak to that because she is part of a work stream looking at funding technology.
Yeah, so the chief has appointed the technology task force to come up with a governance plan, a strategic plan, and as a part of that, a funding component to technology. It's recognized that the state has made it very clear that there won't be money for technology to the courts unless we have a governance plan, a strategic plan, and offer up some method of funding it equitably and appropriately. And so Judge Herman is the chair of that committee. I am the chair of the funding track, and we are in the, and actually to my left, you're on the funding track with me, as is Sherry Carter, and Jake is the chair of the governance track, and We've made a lot of progress in a very short period of time. It's anticipated that our rough draft report will be from the three various tracks, governance, strategic planning, and the funding, will be in rough draft, ready to merge them into a report, hopefully early September. The thought of Judge Herman is very similar to what was rolled out with your good committee on the methodology, and that is to vet it in different venues up and down the state, to be able to demonstrate the inclusiveness of the various folks that have participated in the process. Now I'll speak to the funding part, with the idea that hopefully it'll be ready to go to the Judicial Council. I'm thinking, and I may be speaking out of turn here, and I apologize to Judge Herman in advance, hopefully by the end of the year. Everybody falling out of their chairs at that point. I think I just heard Judge Herman yelling at me. But in any event, just to speak to the technology issue, I believe a little bit that we might be beginning to work in cross purposes, because the funding track of this group is proposing a various method of dealing with funding different types of initiatives, including those types of initiatives that are kind of the big dollar help us all, you know, regardless of what county we're from. And those should be funded from a particular, you know, the state should fund a lot of that directly, all the way down to more local initiatives and how those get funded. So the funding formula would include things like how to deal with this, the $15 million on today's line item. And actually, I think really it's just the 6.9 difference for the maintenance of, I think it's LANWAN, if I'm using the phrase correctly, which really is a backbone item for this state. We can't afford to lose it. But I don't know that pulling the money out of a fund that's operating at a deficit is the method of funding it. I think that we also, as part of what we have talked about in our technology group as a whole, is putting forth a placeholder BCP to begin looking at what should the state fund through the BCP process, including this type of keep this backbone critical technology piece for our state up and running and maintain it appropriately. So I guess my thought is I get a little concerned about jumping the gun and having this committee say let's fund X, Y, and Z when a few months down the road this technology task force operating at the direction of our chief is going to be making some recommendations to the Judicial Council to fund some of these initiatives maybe in different ways that could add viability and life to the IMF fund and other funds as well. So,
David Yamasaki.
Thank you, Judge Earl. Judge Trenacosta very eloquently described the outcome of the discussion that took place when the funding committee convened. But less eloquently, I will say that there was pretty extensive discussion about some of the thinking that's going on behind how the monies have been distributed. The crux of this particular item it was initiated, I think, back in 2001 when a program was started to somehow fund these types of technologies. And it's very clear that a lot has happened since 2001. We certainly had a lot more resources then, making decisions about replacing equipment seemed reasonable and very easy. But now we are really up against the wall in terms of replacing the equipment, particularly when you're talking about $15 million. When we're trying to scrape together a million here and a million there, we have to be very, very careful about how those monies are being expended. And I'm hoping that people who may have been the recipient of some of the monies that were earmarked are not coming away with the notion that it's an outright rejection of the proposals, but rather a need to re-examine how the monies have been distributed historically and how the money should be distributed moving forward. Again, we all are going to be relying more and more on technology, but we have to approach these things with very extensive care and caution to make sure that those types of expenses are what we should do at this point in time. So these are, I think would be fair to say, work in progress. We're going to continue to look at it. We needed more information, and that's one of the reasons why the membership decided to defer some of these items to this committee with the desire of having more information, perhaps getting additional information from some of the technology groups that are already working on this. So, again, it's not a no. It's simply we need to get a better handle on how monies were distributed historically, what the real needs are, and how they should be done in a very transparent and equitable manner going forward.
So I guess with that, if I'm sorry,
Judge Hicks.
Is this a question of asking the Judicial Council to reallocate what we already have under a new methodology, or is this a question of using it as a basis to go to the Department of Finance and convince them that they should give us additional funds?
Isn't this a timing issue? Because going to the Department of Finance, if I understood you correctly, Judge, if the IT strat plan will be in draft, the first draft, by early September, there's no way we can make a BCP request because the BCPs are due in September. You can do a placeholder.
Right.
And then, you know, once it's finalized, by the end of the calendar year, and let's assume it goes to the council in December, if you've got that placeholder, you can submit a budget request to Department of Finance in February, which is what they call the finance letter in February versus a BCP. But the issue, I think, before you today is a timing issue of something for the current fiscal year, because even if we submit BCPs either in September or February, nothing happens in terms of funding until the 14-15 fiscal year. So you've got an issue in the current fiscal year to still grapple with, right?
No, that's accurate.
Correct?
Yeah, and again, in working with Judge Herman and the various work streams, that had been the plan. And, in fact, Robert Olyung, the CIO from Santa Clara, has already drafted some language that will be incorporated into a letter to be sent to the Department of Finance describing our approach going forward and underscoring the fact that we want to submit a request for a placeholder and then use the intervening time period between September and December to strengthen the strategic plan and the business plan going forward.
So I guess, you know, and I understand that, and timing is a very important piece to this. And so then if you look at the just the technology pieces that are included in the line items today, and I'll limit this just to the 6.9 maintenance portion and the Orange County $609,000. The 609, and again, I preface this from the standpoint of I believe in this program. I think it's a program we should all be using, but that's my own personal belief. And I don't mean to impose that on others, but if you look at the Orange County request, which is 609, it's not really 609. It's 2 million the next year and 2 million the next year, so it's $4,600,000, because we're not going to start it this year and then say no next year. So again, I don't mean to deny any sister county an opportunity to do something I think is very appropriate and very good. I just don't know if we're looking at a fund that is being drained to start a new initiative in particular, which again is a separate issue from the maintenance issue. Then on the maintenance side of it, which is $6.9 million, my perspective is the Judge Trinacosta's group and Ms. Carter's group didn't have the documentation that they felt that they needed to really make that decision. And I guess my question would be, do you now feel like you have it? Because I don't know that I have that background of how many switches are really gone that really need to be replaced. this is the perfect whipping board we find ourselves when we defer maintenance. It gets very, very expensive. But how much is emergent? How many switches have gone out? How many switches are about to go out? Is that 6.9 something that could be reduced to really hit those emergent maintenance issues? And I did read that it was 77% of the switches, I think, if I remember reading it correctly, the 77%, and it dealt with a handful of counties. I guess my point being is I just don't know that I feel like this body has the data to make that call for that amount of money at this stage. And again, I don't disagree with the program. I don't disagree with the fact that it must be maintained and it will only get more expensive if we don't. I just don't know that we have. And I guess my point being, Ms. Patel, is that, yeah, I do think that it is something that should be put into the BCP process. But if we're putting that data, that information together to give to DLF to determine whether or not it's an appropriate BCP, then this body should have that type of data as well. And if we just defer this for a month or two, we could have that and have a full vetting and make sure that we're making an appropriate and informed decision as it relates to that expenditure. That's just my point.
Mike. To me, I guess this represents, and I'll use the term that was used a bit ago, an anachronism. I mean, this program was funded years ago in a very different time. And our quandary is how do we extricate ourselves from this anachronism to put it in line with, you know, more, I think, where we're heading with WAFM and initiatives of that nature, where we're talking about fundamental equity across all 58 courts. The land telecommunications funding is clearly not equitable. It was developed under a different set of conditions, a different set of understandings, a different direction. And so on the short, you know, my catch-22 is that on the short term, I get that infrastructure fails. We did not buy forever switches from Cisco and San Diego. They do break. So how do we replace those at a time when we don't have access to the funds? And I don't begrudge anybody the fact that this is critical money. So I think, much like we did with WAFM, we need to figure out how to compromise in the short term, but in the long term, as quickly as possible, we need to make this an equitable program for all 58 courts so that we all have the infrastructure we need, whether it's something we can fund from IMF, the trust fund, hopefully the state gives us new money, whatever that mechanism is. But I don't think this is the last anachronistic program we're going to find. And our quandary is just how do we make that adjustment? How do we turn this thing 180 on a dime while we're going 200 miles an hour? So I'm willing to compromise in the short term, but I want to see some long-term progress towards equity because that's what we all voted for when we voted for WAFM.
Mary Beth. Just to kind of talk in response to your remarks, Mike, and then to add to what Judge Slough said earlier, with respect to what the funding subcommittee of the technology committee will be putting forward. From what's described in this small piece here, what's in this telecommunications, I know with the model that we would put forward for funding, many of those pieces we would say, that's local, that's your local equipment. And some of the pieces we would say, you know what, that's statewide. So we really, you know, and if it's local, then we've got to build it into WAFM. So we have a lot of moving parts that are converging together here, and I agree with Mike that, you know, for the short term this will work, but we've got a lot of pieces moving together, and we really need to get all those players in the room to see how those parts are going to move together to move us forward. But it is time to really come up with that disentanglement plan, and keeping in mind what's fair local, what's fair statewide, and again, make sure it's fair. And for the things that are local that have not been accounted for previously, then we're in with, you know, Judge Freeman and the WAFM adjustment request, I think. So they're all coming together.
Can I ask Judge Trenacosta or Sherry, that you've indicated that your subcommittee felt it didn't have enough information on these two items that we're referring to, and I think Judge Slough has weighed in that she feels the same. Can you put your hands on the type of information you would need and whether or not there's an opportunity for us to gather that?
I'll just give you my thoughts because, in fairness to our committee members, our subcommittee members, we were waiting for the information. We felt that, you know, we didn't know what the information was going to be and that we would have the whole committee today to discuss the information. But I will speak for myself only. I think Judge Slough has brought out really the gist of the problem. None of us want to cripple a brother or sister court who may need the funds now to keep their case management system and technology infrastructure up and running. It's difficult to discern from what we have as to what truly is an emergency so that we can give these folks a bridge to the next event, which hopefully will be, as I said previously, a more kind of cohesive policy, a more comprehensive policy. And I realize that we have several committees that are working to do just that, except that in fact they haven't done their work, it hasn't been debated and vetted and voted. So I feel that today, for me only, it would be difficult for me to give you an honest recitation of what within this grant proposal is emergency versus non-emergency. And I think that that really is the gist of the problem. Do no harm.
Sherry?
I echo, of course, everything that Judge Trent Acosta said, but I do want to point out that when we requested this information, we didn't get this until you did. We did not get this information until last night or whatever time, the night before. And so at the time we requested it, I did not know, as the CEO of Riverside, that we were number one, nor did I know, as the incoming CEO of LA, that they have received zero money. So I want you to know that I didn't know either of those positions until you all did, because I didn't see the spreadsheet. So I'm going to pretend like I'm San Diego, because that's more of a neutral position. I still have a lot of questions. I don't know why, with the various programs that are funded in the refresh, that it's 16 here, 23 here, 29 here, 51. You know, it's differing levels. I don't understand that, and I think that's something that the Technology Committee should understand. Was it offered to all the courts? Why are there differences? For example, the emergency plan, why are there so few courts with that? Is that because that's what they requested, or is there a plan to get them all? And I think that the Technology Committee should review those sorts of things to understand where the money's going. I think we should understand the age of the switches that we're replacing, if they're absolutely end of life, or is it at a point where the Cisco or the consultants say you should replace them, but it's not necessary yet. I think those are some of the details that we need to understand a little bit more. I would question, now I'm going to pretend like I'm San Diego, who has received very little money and looking at the forecast will receive zero money under this scenario, whether or not it should be reassessed, because decisions made in 2002 under a historical model are what we're trying to get away from, and it might be that their equipment, if they're now included, has more of a priority than even the forecast. And so I think there's a lot of information that we still need to have personally before we before I would be comfortable in approving the $6.9 million request.
Judge Hicks?
I think the committee's concern, the subcommittee's concern, was we need to keep gas in the tank for all the statewide systems pending a transition to what we hope will be a new system. And there was a lot of discussion about that. So if there's statewide, branch-wide support systems, those need to be supported. If there's something like Fresno, which basically has to have it or they don't have a system, that has to be supported. And I think the question in my mind and some others about the switches was, is this getting ahead of the game? Is this funding something that's going to be good for the next 5-10 years when maybe we'll have a different system? And that's why the question came up. But I think nobody disputed that the basic maintenance items needed to be approved. And that's what was the $58 million essentially was that.
Just laugh.
I don't know if it's time for a motion or not.
Can I, before we do that, can I ask, I see Mr. Dustman, who's seated in the audience, and can I ask you to come up so that we could ask some questions, Mr. Dustman? The question that I think strikes out in my mind is, within the timing that you live in, could we defer action on these two items, the telecommunications support and Orange County's telecom project, until further information is gathered? And I understand that the Expenditure and Revenue Subcommittee will be meeting again in September or October. Could we defer action on these until October and take them to the Judicial Council in October?
So let me just say, the Orange County issue came up with us. That's almost a separate and independent issue, because as Brian Taylor pointed out in our discussions at that meeting, so Orange County is sitting on a pile of money, and Mr. Carlson is saying, I don't know where I'm going to put this money and use it. And one of the things we said, well, wait a minute. You have these reserves. We know we have to spend down. Why would we pay for a system for them where you have this additional money that you're going to spend? And we thought that was a separate issue. Then we separated it out of the switch issue.
All right.
That became a whole independent issue.
So we'll just
have to support a whole bunch of courts, and we didn't have the information to allow us to make some kind of intelligent decision.
So we'll separate those issues for purpose of our discussion and just ask them to address the issue dealing with the telecommunications support at this time.
Yes, so Judge, on actually for just the telecommunications support, we can encompass a delay, a deferral of a decision by your committee. Typically what we do is once we have approval of funding, we work with our vendors to do assessments of those, in this case, 16 courts and the 548 switches and routers that need to be replaced, and develop what we call bills of material, so the actual model numbers and specifications. And that work can actually be done into the next fiscal year. As long as we get the actual expenditure done this year, we can continue the work into next year. So I want to point out one thing that you all have been struggling with on this around whether there's an emergency or not. And this program does not deal with emergencies. It is a maintenance program, and what we're facing, as Judge Slough very well put it, is deferral of needed maintenance of the court's network systems. And so the past 2 years, this group has essentially said, you need to defer maintenance of these essential pieces of equipment. And that's starting to catch up. And so this year, that's why you're seeing the increase over last year, is to say, okay, you've put this off for 2 years. At some point, you are going to be in an emergency situation. And this particular pot of money right now doesn't deal with those emergencies. If things fail and they're not in the program, they're not being replaced, it's the courts that end up having to pay for that out of their operating funds. It's not this program. So the idea is to get a program in place that gets things replaced before they break, so that the courts aren't subject to those expenditures, which are difficult for them to anticipate unless they have a program like this.
Rick.
This is probably ancient history, but as I recall, this whole program came out of the effort back in the early 2000s to get courts to kind of coalesce and come up with mutual plans. And the Bay Area courts got together and said, we need a plan to deal with infrastructure and bring everybody up to a certain standard. And then it developed into a statewide program, I think, with the same objectives. And I can't disagree with anything that's being said so far, but I did want to reiterate that the major benefits of this program is standardization, so that we can all get to a smaller number of perhaps case management systems and other technology, economy of scale, because this is one of the programs where we can really take advantage of statewide buying power and really benefit and do things much more economically and provide the uniformity that's necessary and bring people up to a certain standard. So as we as we're looking to go to the state for more money for case management and to do things on a more unified basis, this program really needs to be taken into account for that purpose.
So I think I had Judge Slough, Mary Beth, Mike Roddy, and Judge Good in that order.
I'm going to pass because I was going to make a motion.
Okay.
And mine was just technical, so I don't want to.
Mike?
I don't disagree with the thing that Rick said, but I can tell you the reason San Diego didn't opt into the program is because at the time, we invested significant money and had a state-of-the-art infrastructure system in place. We didn't need to participate. But having said that, we are now no longer anywhere on the radar in terms of upgrades and replacements. And yes, it is very expensive and unanticipated when your switches fail and you have to have people replacing those things coming out of the local budget. Those courts that opted out, I think, for good reasons. I mean, we didn't need to participate. We need to come back around now that we've changed the parameters under which we define how we're going to fund projects and programs in this branch and put everybody on the table so that everybody's treated equally. Because we all have equal infrastructure issues, but we're not all equally on the plate for replacement or upgrade at this point.
Do you have a suggestion on how we do that?
Well, I frankly have great trust and confidence in our subcommittees. Offhand, I do not. It's very easy for me to say, let's just go out and assess all 58 courts and then, you know, maybe our switches are older than even some of them on the refresh list. I don't know, you know, that's bull in the china shop. I don't think I'm ready to do that. But I'm just raising the issue that things have changed. We need to get everybody on the same level playing field because this program was started at a time when conditions were very different. And I don't disagree with the idea that we ought to have, you know, infrastructure commonality or standardization, but right now we don't have that. We're funding history, and we need to change that.